It's time for the teleconference, so let's get started.
Absolutely. Well, we want to thank everyone who is on the call. We know we cannot see you, but we certainly feel you, and we're so grateful that you've taken time out of your busy schedules to join us tonight and to really talk about a very interesting topic. Before we start, however, I want to introduce myself. My name is Gladys Diaz, and I am one of the co-owners, together with Michelle Oliva and Brandy Baldwin, I'm sorry, Michelle Rosa and Brandy Baldwin, of Hearts Desire International. And we're a company here in Miami, Florida, who is, like Laura, completely committed to helping women discover the keys to creating and living into the relationships of their dreams. And we are absolutely, I don't even know if excited is the right word, but we are honored and just so pleased that we get to partner with Laura Doyle to not only offer these teleconferences, but share the work that she so brilliantly put together in her books, The Surrendered Wife and The Surrendered Single. And we're partnering with Laura also to offer two incredible programs. The first one is coming up in June, and we are so excited. Those of you who are here in Miami are probably sick of hearing about it, and you'll hear about it some more because we are so excited about the Lifelong Mastery, Lifelong Romance Mastery Weekend, because it really is all about learning about the habits, the practices that lead to having a romance that lasts for a lifetime. And that's going to be held June 22nd through the 24th, 2012, right here in South Florida. So we're super excited about that. And then I'm also very excited about the fact that we are going to be revealing at that retreat the new certified trainer program for Laura's training programs. We're going to reveal it. It's going to be the first time that we talk about it and we let people know what it is, what it's going to consist of. And just so that you know, as I said, you know, Heart Desire and Laura, we are really committed to transforming this world one woman and one relationship at a time. And we recognize that we just can't do it with four people. So what Laura and I are trying to create, or what we are creating, is an army of trainers, a cadre of trainers, 1,000 strong, where we are constantly sharing this work with women so they do not have to live in a certain part of the world or be in any particular place in order to avail themselves of the habits and the principles that we share in our workshops. So it's giving you, those of you who are already practicing these principles, or those of you who are going to start learning with us and are going to be attending the retreat and learning about the principles of surrender and other principles that really lead to the lifelong romance, to start sharing with the people in your community, the people in your places of worship, your family, your friends. And really, that's what we mean about transforming this world. We want every woman to know that she is deserving. It is her birthright to be loved and cherished and adored and to live in a relationship that is intimate, passionate, and fulfilling. So that's why we're doing all of this. And we're thrilled to be able to offer people this opportunity. But now, let's get to our call. And before we start actually talking with Laura, I do want to let everyone know that you can submit questions. Some of you have submitted questions beforehand, but you can, if something Laura says something or you already have something on your heart or your mind that you want to ask, at the end of the call, we will be answering questions. So you can send them to GLAD1, that's GLAD, the number one, at live.com. That's GLAD1 at live.com. And I'll be checking my email periodically throughout the call, and we probably won't be able to get to all of them. The last call was any indication. We had about 70 to 90 people on the call. We got lots of questions, but we will do our best. And if not, we will be answering the questions on future teleseminars. We have one planned for February 21st, so mark that in your calendars. We'll remind you about that at the end. But definitely send your questions in as Laura is speaking, and we will try to take as many as we can at the end. So for those of you who are new to these calls or who have not heard about who Laura Doyle is, let me just tell you that she is a woman that is on a mission. And you know, if you go to her website, lauradoyle.org, you'll see it's a revolution that she started over a decade ago. She's a New York Times bestselling author of the books The Surrendered Wife on a surrendered single. She has dedicated her life, opening her heart, letting people know about the struggles that she went through when she found that her marriage was not everything that she had dreamed of, and the journey that she took by just putting the principles into practice that we're going to be sharing with you tonight, along with others that we'll be sharing at the retreat, and really transformed her marriage. But it wasn't enough for her to have a happy marriage. She's dedicated her life to making sure that every woman knows that she deserves to be in a wonderful, loving, passionate, intimate, peaceful, knock-your-socks-off relationship. So I want to invite all of you to get your pencils ready, because there's going to be lots of great information shared. And really listen with your ears and with your heart as Laura opens up her heart and shares with us the habits that, one of the habits that she learned the hard way, that led to creating the beautiful romance that she now has with John Doyle. So without any further ado, here is Laura Doyle.
Wow, Gladys, thank you. That's an incredible introduction. I really appreciate it. And I am also very excited to be here talking about what it means to be a feminine creature on this planet and what that looks like in a relationship and how it contributes to having an amazing romance. And I'm going to start by telling you yet another embarrassing story from the last time that John and I moved house. I was really excited to move because we were going to a bigger house in a better area that I'd always wanted to live in. But when we were packing, I started to feel sad about leaving our home. And I hated to put away the things in the kitchen that we had remodeled. And I started to realize that I wouldn't see the hydrangeas under the bedroom window anymore. And that I would miss the patio where we salsa danced with our friends for our anniversary party. And I was so sad that I started really crying. I was crying like I Love Lucy style crying. And when John asked me what was wrong, I said, well, I'm sad about leaving our home. And John said, well, we don't have to. We can back out of the new house. We can cancel the movers. We can stay here if you want. And so I said, and this is the part where I sound like a nut job, I said, but I want to move in the new house. And so John just sighed and patiently gave me a hug while I had my meltdown. Certainly, I was not at my best at that moment, but I really felt some grief about moving out of our home of 13 years. And honestly, this is how I get sometimes. I consider it my prerogative as a woman to have contradictory emotions and to express those. And I'm not sure what the alternative is, really. Now, imagine, if you will, that John was having that kind of reaction, the same reaction I was having.
Oh, my gosh. Please make it stop. That is not a pretty picture.
No. It's just, it's not attractive, is it? I mean, granted, it's not exactly flattering on me either, but it would sure be a turnoff to see a guy getting misty-eyed over moving. I mean, guys are usually a little more even-keeled than that, and frankly, I'm glad about that. We really didn't need two of us moping around the house having high drama that day.
Exactly. So what I hear you saying is that you are kind of glad that John's not quite as dramatic or emotional as you are.
Oh, I'm very glad. He's such a steady Eddie, you know, mostly governed by logic. And he's typical of good guys everywhere who tend to be more rational and practical than I'll ever be. And what I like about this story is how well it illustrates our differences. But, you know, there was a time when I would have told you that there was no real difference between men and women. I felt that it was, you know, old-fashioned and unenlightened to say that men are more logical or women are more intuitive. I believed that we were not just equal, but exactly the same. I mean, exactly. You know, I figured I was a softer, smaller version of a man in a skirt with heels on and lipstick who liked romantic comedies over movies with lots of explosions, but we were the same. I believe that. So to this day, I feel a little anxiety about speaking of how men and women are different, because I know there are exceptions to every rule, and it has been liberating to to be able to wear pants to work and choose work that was traditionally reserved for men. So I'm going to speak of my own experience. And in my case, I took things a little too far. And I denied that there were any differences at all. And that meant I had to deny a great many things that are pretty hard to deny, like PMS. Right? I'd say, well, hey, guys get moody too. I just shrugged that one off. It's a paternalistic myth. No such thing as PMS. I denied that I had a special gift for honing in on what I was feeling and also for expressing it, as women do. I denied that I should get any special treatment, like a door being opened for me or being treated to a meal on a date. Or having a man get my bag from the overhead compartment for me. I denied that having casual sex would be any different for me than it would be for a man. We're just the same. You know, I denied that as a woman, I was a powerful magnet for men. I also denied that I need to talk much, much more than most men do.
Okay, I can relate to you on that one because my husband, he's amazed that my girlfriends and I that we can find so much to talk about. You know, he'll say, were you talking on the phone with the same person that whole time? And, like, I just took a trip to Mars, or rather Venus, and back. He just can't, get it, you know. That we
Yeah,
have
I know.
That.
Yeah. I was telling a guy friend of mine about the lifelong romance retreat in Miami in June, and he said, how can you talk about relationships for 3 days? Won't you run out of things to say?
Not likely. Knowing you and me, I have a feeling that come Sunday, a lot of us are going to be I Love Lucy style crying. Number one, because it's over, and we're going to have to say goodbye to one another. And I know we're going to feel so connected to everyone there. And the two, because we're going to absolutely have so much more that we want to talk about.
Definitely. But we'll be doing more than just talking at that retreat. You know, we're going to be living the six principles of an intimate, passionate, peaceful relationship and practicing the habits to attract and marry the man who's right for you and discussing how to know when you've met the man who's right for you and how to adopt the habits that lead to lifelong romance. So it really will be, you know, life-changing in a way that just talking can't be. And at the end of this teleconference, I'm going to give everyone a discount code you can use to sign up and save $100 on the registration as a way of thanking you for listening tonight. But I digress. Where was I?
Oh, you were in complete and total denial about men and women being different.
Right. Yeah, that's true. All right. Okay. And that caused me some other problems, Gladys. For instance, since I believed that men and women were the same, I had a hard time understanding why men act the way they do. It wasn't just my husband that I thought should change. You know, I thought that men in general, you know, they really needed to improve. You know, my dad had been, like, too rough on us as kids, I thought, and he was still emotionally unavailable. And my brother was not in touch with his feelings at all, except for his anger at me for trying to make him go to therapy and talk about his feelings when he was a teenager. And I was only, you know, trying to help him deal with all of his issues, like that anger, for instance. You know, boy, did he need to open up. At least that's what I thought. And none of these guys was great at communicating by using I feel statements, which I'd learned in therapy, and I tried to teach them dozens of times. You know, the ones where you say, I feel hurt by what you said, not I feel like having a hamburger. Talk about not getting it.
I don't know. I wonder why they didn't get it. I mean, you sound like such a compassionate teacher.
I mean, it's mind-boggling, right? And then, okay, there were also these other men I knew who did things that just seemed inappropriate to me. Like my friend Brian, he had his 10-year-old son at the beach, and he said, hey, do you want to race down to the ocean? And the kid said, yeah, you know. And so he goes, 1, 2, 3. And at the end of counting to 3, he pushed the kid down on the sand and took off running to the water. And I was just appalled at a grown man shoving a child and modeling such poor sportsmanship. You know, it seemed, I don't know, irresponsible. And the kid didn't seem too upset about it, but I sure was.
Well, I can totally relate to that as a mom. You know, I can't, first of all, I can't imagine pushing my child down in the sand. I would be horrified. But, you know, when my husband and my sons, they start wrestling or they're pretending that they're ninjas, and I have to leave the room. It makes me nervous. I just think like it's too violent, you know. But my kids beg their dad, can we play this before bedtime? Dad, can we play before bedtime? And I'm like, I don't get it. I mean, they get it. It's a different type of nurturing that really they only get from dad, because I'm not about to, like, slam them against the bed, you know. I can't imagine feeling that slamming my son into the bed is loving, but my kids get it. And maybe it's because they're boys. They get it. It's a different kind of nurturing.
Yeah. Yeah. I can't really picture you slamming your kids into their beds either. I just can't picture that, Gladys, but this does seem to be part of the male culture. I mean, you know, another aspect of it that I find just uncivilized, I guess I'll say, is my pals, Sean and Mike, who every time they see each other, they greet each other with the worst insults they could think up. Like, they'd say, hey, what's up, fat ass? And, you know, hey, butt wipe, you know, what you been doing? And that was business as usual for them. But I just found it, I don't know, immature.
Mm-hmm. I'm just sitting here thinking, you know, imagining myself walking into a brunch and greeting my sister Michelle with a, hey there, fat ass. I think she would be, hi. It just sounds so rude, you know, to female ears.
Yeah, that's what I thought too. And my expectation was that men should be more like women. If only men would be more sensitive and talk about their feelings, you know, relationships would be so much better, I thought. In particular, I thought I would be able to get my need for connection met because our conversations would be really intimate. And as you can imagine, my view that men were lacking wasn't so great for my romance with my husband, who is himself a man, and therefore kind of Neanderthal in my view at the time. And I was barely able to hide my contempt at times, which made John defensive and withdrawn.
So is this call about telling us how we can get men to stop acting like Neanderthals?
Well, Orson Welles said, if it wasn't for women, we, meaning men, would still be squatting in caves eating raw meat because we invented civilization to impress our girlfriends. When we take a feminine approach, there's nothing a man won't do to impress his wife or girlfriend. And that starts acknowledging that we're different and really celebrating that, saying, thank goodness we're so different. Because for one thing, we women get special treatment from them just because we're women. So a big part of taking a feminine approach, if you're taking notes, is this: receive special treatment.
Can you give us some examples of how to receive special treatment from men? Because I think we might think it's what they should do, or men just don't do that anymore. So what are some of the things that you can give us as examples of special treatment?
Sure. Well, so I'll start with some simple ones. Like, if you're cold and a man offers you his jacket, then you just thank him and you luxuriate in that jacket. That's being receptive and allowing him to be masculine with you, which feels good all around. He's going to enjoy that feeling, and you're going to enjoy it as well. And if he tells you that you're beautiful, you accept the compliment graciously. And this is true, by the way. Even if you're not interested in a romance with someone, you can just practice being receptive by saying thank you when someone tells you you're beautiful. There's just no downside. Now, if a man offers to help you carry the boxes you were about to move, let him. You just smile. You say, thank you, not, oh, I've got it, right? Mm-hmm. And I find now that I've been taking a feminine approach with my husband for so long, I have it with me wherever I go. So I was on a plane recently, and a man was sitting in my aisle, and he asked me if he could get my bag from the overhead compartment as we were disembarking, and I said, actually, well, I don't have one, but I kind of wished I did because it would have been nice to feel feminine, and he probably would have felt masculine, and we'd both feel good. And these days, I accept those kinds of offers out of habit. I'm used to getting special treatment, and I love it. And then a few minutes later, while we were headed to baggage claim, we came to this long staircase, and there was another man He'd been seated next to a businesswoman who had a big rolling suitcase, and he offered to carry her luggage down the stairs for her, but she said, "No, I've got it." And then he was off like a shot, and then she muttered, "Well, this is scary," as she was trying to navigate the stairs and her bags by herself. And I couldn't help myself from commenting because I like to control everyone else. So I said, "Well, then let him help you," as I passed her. And she said, "Well, I have to be able to do this by myself if he wasn't here."
You know, that's such a great point because I often have to, you know, we're so independent, right? We've learned that we need to be, quote, unquote, independent. I often remind myself that I can do it by myself. Like, I'm capable of doing it by myself, but I'm glad that I don't have to.
Yes, exactly.
Well, you know, and here's the thing. Like, she really missed that opportunity. You know how you said that you wish that you had had the opportunity for the man to help you? Like, she really missed that opportunity to get that special treatment. But what about if, you know, she thought he was hitting on her and she wasn't, you know, interested in him romantically?
Yeah, you know, it could be. But she missed the chance to just feel feminine because she thought she had to be independent. And she missed a chance to get help with her luggage, which it seemed like she really could have used.
Yeah, so, you know, I'm thinking about, you know, our romances, like those of us who are in relationships, you know, how can we take a feminine approach in our relationships? Because we're already in it, so.
Right. Well, one of the mistakes I used to make before I surrendered was trying to initiate sex by saying, "We should have sex pretty soon because it's been a while."
How did that go?
not very well. Yeah, I would say it not only didn't put him in the mood, it also ended up making me feel rejected and undesirable because he didn't want to have sex with me after that. From his standpoint, it sounded like I was adding lovemaking to his to-do list, right between, you know, take out the trash, trim the hedges, make love to Laura.
So, you know, I know we talked about this a little bit, but I think it's such an important point, you know, on the last call. So what should a woman do? You know, she wants to be intimate, but she sees that her husband's not really starting anything.
Well, the feminine approach is to remember that you are a magnet for men who are, by the way, a very reliable 24/7 noticing service for women. They notice us all the time. So if I take the approach of being seductive, maybe by wearing something seductive or just by standing very close to him and flirting with him, he finds that very appealing. And I end up not just having sex, but feeling desired, feeling sexy. And that's what I'm really after. That's what really feels good to me. Now, the problem is it's much harder to do this because it feels so vulnerable. You know, if you're rejected when you're wearing a cute little lacy teddy, I mean, you feel really silly. So in a way, it seems safer to just say, "Hey, let's have sex." But the feminine approach is to be a seductress, not to make demands for sex.
Right. So what I'm hearing is that we want to make having sex with us seem like an invitation rather than an obligation. So we're making him an offer he can refuse, but probably won't want to.
Right. Exactly.
So what about outside of the bedroom? So let's say that you want to get special treatment, but you feel like you haven't been getting it for years. You don't feel that your husband's doing special things for you. What can the women on the line who are in that situation do to regain some of that?
Well, one of our gifts as women is that we are powerfully connected to our feelings and to our desires. However, in my case, I was so out of practice from trying to man up that I typically express my feelings and desires as demands or criticism or complaints. And it wasn't feminine. It was more like a kid having a temper tantrum, actually. A mature woman speaks of her feelings and her desires in a normal voice, not screeching, no crying. So the more you know what you want and express it clearly and cleanly, and by cleanly, I mean no manipulation, no criticism, the more you're going to inspire a man to give you those desires, as long as he feels he can be successful, as long as he feels you are pleasable, and this is a big one, he also has to feel that you respect him. So another way to take a feminine approach, if you're taking notes, is this: to focus on how you feel and what you want and expressing that simply and purely so that you give him the chance to make you happy. This really is an amazing gift we have, and it's a powerful force in the world because men want to fulfill our desires. That was evident for me again when John said we could cancel the contract to purchase our new house if I didn't want to move because I was going to miss the hydrangeas too much. Mm-hmm. What's not to respect about that? It's so sweet.
Yeah, it really is. It really is really sweet. And I wanted to share something because, you know, as you're talking about this, I know that one of the things I discovered in my own marriage was how I needed to change my hat. I switched my roles when I left work, and it was time to come home and be with my husband. You know, at work, I was managing people all day. I was in a very high-level position. There's a bottom line. There's deadlines that have to be met. And I was managing a group of people that were really living all over the country. So I had to let people know what had to be done and by when. And, you know, it made me really effective at work. I was the youngest VP in my company. You know, I constantly got recognized for my organizational skills and my leadership skills. But what I didn't notice was that when I came home, I was still in that managing mode. And I didn't realize that I was telling Rick what he had to do, by when he had to do it, and then calling him on the carpet when it didn't get done. And, you know, it reminded me when you said the screaming temper tantrum, because what I was doing was, when he didn't do the things, I took it to mean that he didn't care about me, that he didn't care about what I wanted, you know, that I was working so hard, like he didn't care. But, you know, now I know that what was going on was that he just didn't want to be managed. And, you know, I learned that I didn't want to manage my husband. You know, being recognized for leadership, being on point, and, you know, I wanted my bosses to, you know, to notice as a job, but I didn't care if they held my hand. You know, what I want from my husband, you know, I wanted to be cherished, and I wanted to be treated with love and gentleness. I didn't want to have to be, you know, quote-unquote, on all the time. And, you know, I wanted him to cuddle with me on the couch and play with my hair and rub my feet, not necessarily what I want my boss doing, you know. So it was different. It was different from the attention that I got at work, and it really wasn't until I started being more vulnerable, asking for help, you know, rather than trying to do everything myself or demanding that things got done, and really just allowing myself to be softer at home, that I really began to start getting the type of attention that I was craving. And my sister Michelle, I love it. She calls it going from being the invincible woman at work becoming the irresistible woman at home.
That is a great point. I mean, we'll talk more about switching roles in future teleconferences, and certainly we're going to talk about this at the Lifelong Romance Retreat too.
Definitely. And, you know, I know that there's probably a lot more. I mean, we could probably do a whole another hour, but we want to honor people's time. You know, a lot more to say about how to take a feminine approach and how taking this approach could really transform your romantic life, whether you're single or you're already in a relationship, you know, just being softer and more feminine. But I want to make sure that we have time for questions. We have a couple that came in. And before we get to the questions, though, I wrote down that you mentioned that you were going to give out a discount code that's good for $100 off the price of the registration for the Lifelong Romance Retreat. So can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, I mean, I don't want anybody to miss this event who would like to be there and get the tools and the habits that will give her a lifelong romance. I mean, and we do mean an amazing one where you're constantly surprised and delighted and enjoying yourself. So if I can have that, and everyone here knows what a mess I was when I got married, then every single one of you can have it too, but only if you have the right tools and the right habits. So this is the retreat I wish I had gone to when I was first starting out my relationship with my husband. So if you register in the next 7 days, so today's the 17th, today's the 17th, so if you register by next Tuesday, then you will get a $100 discount off of the price if you type in the word feminine. So we still have an early bird special. It's $495. You put in the word feminine, you get $100 off that price. We also have an even better deal for people that are coming with a friend or their mom or their daughter or their sister. If you both register at once, you can still get the $100 off, and you'll get an even better price. So the code, the secret code is feminine.
That's awesome. And ladies, I really want to encourage you, if you have a friend, or like Dorothea, we do have mother-daughter teams coming. We have people from really all over the globe coming, and people are coming with their friends. And the reason why that's so important is because it really, you start to create your support system. You start surrounding yourself with women who are up to the same thing that you are and who are practicing the same principles. And so that when you call them, rather than agreeing with you, you know, when you're in your funk, they're actually saying, well, you know, did you smile and flirt? If you're single, did you receive graciously? Did you, you know, were you being feminine, or were you scared and you kind of manned up a little bit? So it really is a wonderful opportunity to come with your support system. So if you want to save even more money, like Laura said, you know, sign up together, and you're also building your army around you, you know, that's going to help you really create the relationship that you want. And you'll see that option when you go to the website. You'll see that there's an option to register with a friend. And that website, again, is www.lauradoyle.org. And Laura, I also want to remind everyone, because we have gotten some emails about men coming, you know, this is a retreat only for women. Yes, it's called the Lifelong Romance Retreat, but it really is for women, because we really do have the power to create the relationship that we want, and the man responds to that. And so men are not invited, but don't worry if you're married or you're in a relationship, you're not going to be lonely at all. You know, there's going to be single women at the event. There's going to be married women, girlfriends, women who are engaged. So wherever you are in your romantic life, it's perfect. It's perfect to come and learn the tools and habits that lead to having a lifelong romance. So, you know, we really encourage you to do that. Let me check on time here. Okay, we have some time. I do want to remind people, if you have a question, and it doesn't have to be about this topic, it can be anything having to do with relationships. If you have a question about dating, if you feel like you're stuck and you'd like to have a few minutes of Laura and my time, that maybe we can give you an answer, something that you can start working on. You know, our advice is practical. It's going to be something that you can start doing right away. If you're married and you feel like you're, you know, there's something that you'd like to share, I invite you to share, because there's going to be another woman on the call who is so going to benefit from that question. We saw it last month on last month's call. There was a lot of repetition of questions because people are going through the same thing. So while you're doing that, and I'll keep hitting refresh on my button, we do have a question that was emailed, Laura, and the person, she emailed me this evening to let me know she couldn't be on the call, so I'm going to go ahead and read a synopsis of it. But basically, she's saying that, you know, Friday nights are kind of the night for she and her husband to go out, and she doesn't know how to react, because what he considers a date is her driving to meet him after work, and or him asking his 17-year-old son to come with them because he sees them on the weekends. So what she's asking is it wrong for her to, you know, she's already told him that she'd like him to come get her, and he says that he just doesn't want to come home and then have to leave because it's 20 minutes out of the way, and then having to go back out. And her question is, you know, I have this different view of a date night than he does, so do I just accept it?
Yeah, you know, great question. I think one of the things that was so challenging for me when my marriage was in a ditch is that it was so easy for me to point to things that he was doing wrong and say, see, how can I possibly have a better romance when my husband just isn't romantic? He brings our 17-year-old son with us on a date. That's not romantic. Or he expects me to drive to get there. That's not romantic. And that was such a red herring for me, because the individual things that I was pointing out and criticizing really got nowhere near the crux of the problem. The crux of the problem was that, first of all, I wasn't that pleasant to be around because mm-hmm. I wasn't respecting my husband and because I had this long list of complaints about how he was doing everything wrong. So, and it was a definite vicious cycle. The more I complained about the things he was doing wrong, the more he felt like, well, whatever, I can't do anything right anyway, and the more discouraged he was from trying. So my answer is to kind of, in a way, just ignore these two little things that she's bringing up. I don't really think that's what this question is about. What I hear her saying is, I don't feel desired. I don't feel cherished by my husband, and I want to get that back. And my answer to her is, redouble your efforts to be respectful. And the way you do that is by, when you find yourself making your husband wrong or thinking that he's got shortcomings that you just simply can't overcome or accept, those are the things that you want to apologize for being disrespectful about. You know, make a gratitude list for your husband. Read it every day. Add to it every day. You know, add big things and little things. Does he work to support the family? Does he put the baby to bed for you? Does he get you a glass of water in the middle of the night? I mean, everything that he does, that, you know, does he make you laugh? Is he a good driver? You know, whatever you can put on that list, the more you can focus on that, we all create the things that we focus our attention on. So this really has very little to do with date night, and it has everything to do with the whole culture of the relationship being one where I suspect her husband doesn't feel like he's getting the respect he would like from his wife.
Wow, that's a great answer. And, you know, when I read it, I kind of, you know, I felt like the same thing, that she misses, maybe the attention was there at some point and she doesn't feel it's there anymore. Or, you know, I love the part that you said about the red herring, and I know some people may not have read the book. Can you give a little bit of a 2-sentence explanation of what the red herring is? Because that made such a difference in my marriage when I stopped looking everywhere in order to find out what was happening and, you know, and just started looking at what was happening over here. So can you give just a quick explanation of what that red herring is?
Sure, good point. So a red herring is a phrase from old detective movies, I guess, where they're looking for clues and then they find what seems like a really big clue, but it's actually not. It throws them off the trail for the actual murderer or whatever. So they are no closer to finding, you know, solving the case when they get stuck on a red herring. And that's exactly what happens to us in our marriages, or it certainly was what happened to me. You know, I'm so focused on him and the things he wasn't doing that I thought he should be doing, and thinking that that was the problem, and it got me no closer to having the things I wanted, which was to laugh together and just play and, you know, share a bowl of popcorn. So another example that comes to mind that was from a client just this week who said, you know, I could go ahead and share her situation, was she was concerned about her husband who has a friend who's a woman. And she feels very confident that her husband's faithful and nothing wrong is going on. But she was very focused on this particular friend and feeling jealous of the time that he was spending with her. And what we got to at the end of the conversation was that she's working too much, she's doing too much, she doesn't have any time for self-care, she's always jumping up to volunteer for things that need to be done, she does some of her husband's paperwork at night at the end of her, you know, 40-hour work week. Every night she does some work. And so she was really, she's depleted, and she's lonely. She doesn't get enough time with her husband, partly because she's working so much, she doesn't have a whole lot of time. So the red herring is she thinks it's about this other woman. Well, it's not. The only things we can do to improve our marriages is to improve our own selves, and that always starts with self-care. So, and that's another suggestion I would make for the woman whose husband brings the teenager on the dates, is to take a look at your self-care, because we certainly cannot bring the energy that it takes to respect our husbands to our marriages if we don't take care of ourselves first, to make sure we have some energy.
Before I make the comment I'm going to give the email address, because I think I didn't give it the second time. But if you'd like to send an email, We still have about 20 minutes left on the call, and we're committed to ending right on time. So don't wait till the last minute because we won't be able to get to it. The email address is glad1@live.com. glad1@live.com. I just wanted to share really quickly because you know me, I don't believe in coincidences. So last night, a friend of mine posted a video by Dr. Wayne Dyer on Facebook, and I watched it right before going to bed. And he was talking about, you know, how, and the red herring reminded me of it because he said that it's like if you go to the doctor and you start telling the doctor all of these symptoms, right? All of these symptoms are coming up, and this, you know, this hurts, and then I have this. And the doctor just starts writing a bunch of prescriptions. You know, he takes out his pad, and he starts, you know, writing the prescriptions. And right when you're getting ready to leave, you go to take the prescriptions, and he's like, no, this isn't for you. This is for your mom. This one's for your dad. This is for your brother. This is for your husband. So it's the same thing. You know, we're going through all, we're feeling all of these things. Like you said, the woman who was feeling lonely or she's feeling depleted, and we're looking outside of ourselves, you know, because it's this person's fault and that person's fault, and we're looking outside of ourselves and not taking the time to really look inside and say, you know, what, you know, those two questions that you always ask us to ask ourselves, how do I feel and what do I need? And when we do that, it all becomes so clear. You know, it becomes more clear. What is it that's missing and what can I bring in, you know, that would make a difference? So, you know, when you were talking about that, I was thinking about that. I was like, oh, my gosh, that's exactly what was on that video yesterday.
Yes, and I think it's really an important aspect of when we're talking about a feminine approach to really think about what your self-care needs to be. This has to be primary for us as women, and I think a lot of us weren't taught this. Most of us grew up in the age of women being independent, and the way that you could be successful was to never have to depend on a man. So that meant hard work, and it's interesting. I had seen a documentary on World War II where they'd show men who were soldiers were having to wait somewhere in the snow. So they were sleeping, standing up in the snow, holding their guns. And I thought, wow, God love them, because that's not something I could ever picture myself doing. But this is something that men can do. So it's kind of the opposite of needing self-care. You know, they can go without sleep. They can be freezing. Women, we can't do that. So a big part of acknowledging the difference between men and women and taking a feminine approach is just noticing, like, hey, I need X number of hours of sleep a night. I need to eat, you know, 3 decent, wholesome meals and a couple of snacks. And if I don't get at least those 2 basic things, I'm a wreck. And on top of that, you know, what my experience has been is I need at least 3 pleasurable things a day to do. So that might mean that I have lunch with a friend, that I go for a walk. I love to play volleyball, so I'm probably going to do that on a given day. Maybe I listen to music for a while. I dance. I see a comedy because I love to laugh. It always puts me in a good mood. So I try to make that, I religiously put those 3 things a day into my schedule, just like I would put a meeting or a dentist appointment. I make those my priority. And that's fantastically important part of me having a great romance, because John wants to make me happy. My husband just wants to make me happy. But in order for that to happen, I got to make myself happy first. So that's what I have to do as a woman.
And that's so important. And we can't use the excuse that we don't have time or we have the kids or, you know, whatever else, because it's, like you said before, I can put my finger on it when I am feeling overwhelmed and edgy, and I call it like the tarantula. You know how the tarantula is all hairy? I get like that. And if I take one moment to think about it, I'll be like, okay, what have I done for myself lately? You know, what have I done for me lately? And, you know, I have to make it a part of my day. I have to sometimes schedule it, make sure it pops up on my reminders, because otherwise I will get, you know, consumed with work or, you know, and everything else. And I can't give what I don't have. You know, I just can't. Right. Another question that I wanted to ask you, before I ask my question, we just got a couple, but can you just tell me, answer this one really quickly while I bring up the ones that just came in. What about if the roles are reversed in the home in terms of the salary? I know that that's something that sometimes affects the roles in the home. You know, the woman is making more money, and therefore sometimes she feels like she should be taking care of the finances because she's bringing in more money. Maybe the husband hasn't worked or doesn't make as much money. Can you give us some advice about how to address that situation in a relationship?
It's a thoroughly modern problem, and especially we're all reading about the recession. They're calling it the man session, that a lot of men have lost their jobs. And I know for me, when I was working and John wasn't, it was completely devastating for our relationship because I had no sense of being able to surrender in that situation. At the time, I thought, well, I'm making all the money, so I get to control everything, and I expect him to do these things at home. And it was really demoralizing for both of us. And I think there's a pervasive myth among women that men don't like it if the woman makes more than they do. But my experience has been just the opposite. You know, I was the one who didn't feel intimate at that time. And it has probably more to do with my intimacy skills or lack thereof than how much I was making. So I was focused on that aspect of things and using that to contribute to my sense of superiority over my husband. But John wasn't threatened by it. He wasn't upset that I was making more money than him. And my experience has been that most men don't mind, but we women, we do seem to mind. So what I've learned since, and I haven't been in that situation since I surrendered where he was out of work or not earning. But I certainly have had years where I've made more money than him. And you know what? The truth is, I don't even care. Because now I just think of it as our money. And John manages the finances for us. So no matter what happens, I'm always feeling protected and cared for in that regard. Like when we go out to eat, I don't even bring my purse. John brings his wallet and a lot of times I'm just walking out the door with nothing, like almost like a child or something. I just know I'm going to be taken care of. Whatever it is I want to buy or order, John's going to take care of that for me. So I think for me, it was really enormously helpful to surrender control of the finances and get the feeling of being taken care of in that regard, regardless of who was making more money.
Thank you, because I know that's, like you said, it's becoming more pervasive, so I thought maybe that might be out there. Okay, Laura, do you want me to read the question, or do we want to see if the person wants to ask it? I can give the initials in case people don't want to use their name.
That sounds like a great idea. So what I'm going to do is change our mode so that if somebody who asks a question wants to come on the line and ask it in person, they can do so. So we'll give the initials. And if you'd like to come on and ask your question after you hear your initials, and then I guess maybe you should read a little bit about the question so they know that it's them, then all you have to do is hit *6 to unmute yourself, and the rest of us will be able to hear you ask your question. So what's the first initials?
S-E, and it's a dating. Are you there, Laura?
There we go. Sorry, I guess I hit the wrong button first, but now we're good.
So SD, the question about going to certain events, if you would like to ask the question, we'll give you a couple seconds. If not, I'll go ahead and read it. It's perfectly okay. Just press *6 to unmute your line. Hello?
Hello?
Yeah, I heard
this SD. SD? Do we have SD?
Okay.
No luck. Okay. Go ahead, Gladys. Why don't you read the question? If she comes on, we'll let her speak.
Okay. So it says, if you've been dating a guy for a while and he's asked you to do things most of the time, like he's asked you to do things with him, is it okay to ask him to go out or to a certain event, or is it best to wait for him to always ask?
Wow, that's a great question, because certainly as a romance goes past the first few dates, you want to maybe suggest activities that you would enjoy, maybe there's a show that you want to see, or maybe you want to go ice skating. So, I mean, one way is to just express those as desires. One really super feminine way is just to say, oh, you know, I heard my favorite comedian is in town. I'd love to go see him. And a lot of times a guy will say, oh, great, you know, let's make plans to do that. But, yeah, as you go along and you the relationship is established, it's a little bit less about him pursuing you and you just strictly being receptive, because in the day-to-day life there's going to be just regular old, you know, hey, let's do this and let's do that. So you don't have to be super strict about it. I mean, one of the things I like about taking a feminine approach is I feel like it's a real treat to just be authentically myself and honor my desires. And if it's my desire to feel desired, then I owe it to myself to stay in a receptive posture, which means not offering. But, you know, if it's my desire to go see my favorite comedian who's in town, then I can speak up about that, too, or initiate a get-together with somebody who's already been pursuing me. I think it's absolutely fine.
Okay, fantastic. Well, I just want to bring our attention to the time. We have 9 minutes, and we have about 5 questions that just came in at the same time.
Okay.
I just want to remind people, if we don't get to the question, there's a couple things. We'll probably answer it in a future teleconference. Like I said, the next teleconference is going to be on February 21st. Or if it's really a burning topic that you've been struggling with and you feel like you need a little bit more support, you know, you can always contact me at that same email address, and we can look into scheduling some coaching sessions, because some of the issues can be answered in a minute and a half, which is what I'm giving Laura questions. So, you know, feel free to contact me. My email address, again, is glad1@live.com if we're unable to get to your question or if you feel more comfortable asking it privately. Okay. So, Laura, the next question is, a former boyfriend occasionally contacts me in very impersonal ways, like through LinkedIn or e-blasts, and it feels hurtful because they went out for a year. So what she's saying is, I either want this to stop, or if he wants to have a conversation with me, I wish he'd call. I respond to his messages courteously, but it bothers me because I did love him very much. What should I do?
Well, that is a tough one. I guess what I hear, so when I hear about a woman dating a man for a year and then they broke up, what I hear is that she broke up with him. Because we're the ones with all the power, right? So without knowing anything more about that relationship, that's my first thought. And if I guess what I hear you saying is, if these emails are still hitting a tender spot, it sounds like you may not be finished with that relationship. So being the hopeless romantic I am, and a woman who sees this kind of thing, you know, all the time with my clients, what I hear is, you might want to consider trying to rekindle that relationship, because it sounds like there's still quite a bit of power there for you. But my next thought right after that is, if it's absolutely not in the cards for you to try to get back with this person, then my next thought is that since you can't control him, you can't control that he may try to contact you. People may do that from time to time, and to maybe try to reframe those contacts as being less about him trying to hurt you in any way, but maybe him just trying to be friendly, ongoing. I mean, of course, you can always say to people, please don't contact me anymore, but it doesn't sound like he's really being, he's not stalking you, you're not looking for a restraining order. So what I hear is just some tenderness on your part that this is still very raw for you, which tells me that you still have feelings. So I'm right back to where I started, which is, let's see if we can't rekindle this relationship. It sounds like you're both probably still interested. That's the sense that I get.
Okay. Here's a great one. I'm listening on the teleconference, and I've been taking wonderful notes. I've been dating a guy, and I am ready to be married. When do you feel a man should propose to a woman?
That is a great question, and it is totally up to us. You know, whenever I meet a woman that says she's been dating a guy for 8 years, I go, oh, I guess, and I say to her, oh, so you don't want to get married? And usually they say, well, you know, I do eventually, but I can tell it's not their priority. But I hear that it is for you. So I certainly respect that and share that point of view. I think marriage is very important. So you only really need to date for about 6 months before you know everything there is to know about somebody. And I find that that freaks people out. They go, 6 months, are you crazy? You know, in this day and age, you should date for 3 years or 2 years or 8 years or whatever it is, a long, long, long time. But it hasn't been my experience. People tell you who they are. So if you've been dating for at least 6 months, then a couple thoughts. So one thought is usually the topic comes up in some or other fashion. Like it comes up sideways. Like somebody will say playfully, like, "Oh yeah, well when we're married, we'll do blah blah blah," or I'll ask you to get me a beer or something like that. Mm-hmm. And my suggestion to you would be to go right along with that because it really is ideal for them to bring it up. However, if you've been dating for a year or over a year, it's never come up, not even playfully, not even on the side, and watch that you don't squash it down, too. I've had clients where they say, well, he did bring it up, but I said, oh, well, shut up. You've been drinking. You know, they kind of dismiss it in that regard. So you got to be careful that when it comes up that you treat it with the proper regard, even if it's brought up playfully. But if it hasn't even been brought up playfully, then I definitely suggest that you consider letting him know that for you to be happy, you want to be a wife. And okay. I phrase that very carefully because you don't want to say, you have to ask me to marry you, right? That's a completely different sentiment to a man. That's about you have to do this. Whereas the other one is, I want to be a wife or I want to be married. Both of those are perfectly clean. And then you need to be willing to back this, though, which, and by that what I mean is you say, and if that doesn't fit for you, I understand. And then I would need to move on.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have to be willing to follow that through with action.
And Laura,
if you're not, it was just an empty threat. Yeah?
No, I just have to plug your book here because you do such a great job in the Surrender Single of putting the steps, like step by step, wait for the conversation to come up, but also how to express your desire to be married. And there is no manipulation. There is no ultimatum. You don't want him to feel, again, we go back to the invitation versus the obligation. You don't want him to feel pressed. You're going to teach yourself out of a beautiful proposal the moment that you start to try to strategize getting a proposal. So, I just want to let the women who are on the phone who maybe haven't read the book know that I think it's chapter 21 or something like that, 20. It was one of the last chapters. It's textbook, how to have the conversation so that you are really expressing your desire rather than making a demand or giving him an ultimatum. So I just
okay, and which book is that?
That's the Surrendered Single.
I'm sorry?
The Surrendered Single.
Okay.
Very good. And is this the person who asked the question that's on the line with us here?
Yes, I am on the line.
Oh, good. Okay, great.
Yes.
Great. How long have you been dating?
We actually been dating for a year. And he has, like you say, playfully, he was like, oh, I want you to be my wife one day. I mean, he's a very great person. I have a lot of respect for him, and me being I'm a single mother, so
okay.
Coming, I'm listening to where I had to kind of like surrender myself because I was like super mom, you know, being a single mom. So when this great guy came into my life, I really had to put on my feminine, you know, my feminist to let him be, you know, the man in the relationship because I'm used to doing everything. So
yes.
Whenever you guys was talking earlier about receiving that special treatment, I had to kind of, you know, let him do what he does and me be the woman in the relationship. So just like, for example, going to the grocery store, I'm used to, you know, us as women, especially as a single mom or single mother, I got that. I don't need any help. So now what I do when I dare say, can I help you with your bag? Sure. Thank you.
Excellent.
You know,
excellent. That's a great example of practicing receiving when you're out in the world. And
yes,
I'm so interested to hear more about this this relationship and also helping you get to the next level with it.
Okay,
but unfortunately,
great.
We are at the end of our conference call time. I hope you can join us. Or let me just put a shout out for Gladys, too. I got to tell you guys, she's my handpicked partner in crime with this work. And she is just as wise and amazing, maybe more so than I am with coaching.
So,
yeah, so if you're looking for coaching, Gladys definitely has that going. So I really want to thank everyone for joining us here tonight. We're going to have to wrap up, but it was fantastic getting your questions. Just knowing you're out there listening is very inspiring for us. And don't forget to go to lauradoyle.org to register for the retreat, and your coupon code is FEMININE to get the $100 discount. And Gladys, are there other things we need to wrap up?
No, Laura, I just want to thank you for your time, and I want to thank every woman who called in. We want to let you know we are recording the call, and we are going to be sending out the link, and we just invite you to send this out to your friends. Just share it, because you never know whose life you can touch. You know, somebody's going to hear something that we said, and it's going to make all the difference for them. And then maybe that's the person who comes to the retreat with you. So just thank you so much, Laura, for your time. Thank you, ladies. And until next time, as Laura says, take care of you.
Good night, everyone.
Thank you.